Today on the podcast, we are very, very lucky to have the wonderful LMC, Di Cook, in here. She has been a midwife for 30 years this year, and she didn't want to come on the podcast. This is not her jam, but she is a wealth of knowledge. So thank you for coming in.
Thanks for inviting me, I think.
Shall we crack straight into it? Okay, so you are an absolute expert and we can't wait to hear what you have to say. How early should people start looking for a midwife?
I think before you even think about having a baby, you should think about who your midwife should or would be. I definitely think a really good thing to do is ask your family and friends when you are thinking about having a baby. If you ask around and see who people had and whether they were happy with them and what kind of birth they had, sometimes it's not the midwife's fault what kind of birth they had, but it's more about their philosophy of care and that way they were looked after.
Because I think I was about 10 weeks when we started looking. My GP said, "Have you got a midwife? Go on to findamidwife.co.nz."
Yeah.
And we started looking and so many people were booked up and I was like, wait, am I late to the party already? Like, I'm not even showing. I haven't told my family.
Yeah, yeah. And like most people do ring us when they pretty much get that second line on their pregnancy test. So 4 weeks and one day, everyone seems to know that they have to ring pretty early, and especially at the moment because midwives are in really short supply at the moment. And obviously the earlier you can get a midwife, the more choice you will have in who you get.
Do you get calls, Di, of people saying, hey, it's our anniversary coming up and we're thinking of having a really romantic night?
Yeah.
Would you be free 9 months from now to deliver a baby, all things going well?
Yeah, I definitely get texts to ask when my holidays are.
Really?
And everyone knows I never really take people on that are due around Christmas and New Year. That's always my wee holiday time.
Is there a busy season for babies outside of that?
No.
Is it 9 months from Christmas, 9 months from New Year?
Definitely 9 months after Christmas. Definitely the start of October is the busiest time. Definitely I've had people text and say they're going in to have the IVF treatment next month. So can you pencil me in for 10 months' time? But mostly people ring when they first confirm that they're pregnant.
Holy moly. So the first person you should tell is the partner, maybe, depending on how that's all going?
Well, quite often we are the first person before they tell their husband or partner. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Wow. It's very funny sometimes. But that generally is as people that I've looked after before.
Okay.
I'll send the photo of the pregnancy test and then ask or tell their partner that they've got some nice news.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So when you are meeting with midwives to find out if they're a good fit for you, what kind of questions should you be asking apart from are you available 9 months from now?
I suppose it really depends on the person you are and what you're after with your birth. And a lot of people have never thought about it until they get pregnant.
How do you know what kind of birth you're going to want?
That's the tricky thing when you first get pregnant, you really don't have an idea. And a lot of people listen to podcasts and go to antenatal classes and listen to different things. There's definitely a good list to ask right from the start, and that is like what kind of birth that you think you'd like. Like some people are very medical, they're like, I totally want to be safe. I want to be in the hospital. I want this around and this around. Others are at the other end of the spectrum, say, I want to be safe. I want to be at home and have my baby with my family in a home environment. So I definitely think a lot of people know which way they swing before they bring a midwife, which is funny, but most people do. Now, I've never done home births. I've always delivered babies in primary units or Christchurch women's.
Someone calls you and says, Di, I'd love you to be my midwife and I want a home birth.
Yeah.
At that point, do you say we might not be a good fit?
Yeah, totally. And I would put them in contact with a really good home birth midwife.
Okay.
Yeah. because, yeah, that's just not my scope of practice, whereas other midwives, that's their thing and they're amazing at it. So it is, it's always about the right fit.
And if you don't know, as the person giving birth, if you don't know what it is you want, are you likely to get swayed in a certain direction?
As in someone's opinion?
Yeah, what if you feel like your midwife is kind of pushing you to give birth in a certain setting or, you know, under certain circumstances, for instance, without an epidural, when you've always wanted an epidural? What do you do in that situation?
Yeah, that comes up a lot, actually. That does happen a lot. I think that you have to be quite clear on what you really want, and you have to be quite strong, and it's pretty hard to be strong when you're trusting the person that's in front of you who's supposed to be guiding you if they're not coming in at a partnership, which it should be. I mean, our job is pretty much to give you the information and the care so you can make the choice that's right for you guys and where you should deliver. And sometimes, you know, I think it's during the pregnancy, it's a real trust thing that develops over the pregnancy. So yeah, I find the ladies that I look after, it's pretty simple as we go through because we build that relationship.
Yeah.
And we kind of, you know, I'm never going to force, I always say to my girls, I'm never going to force you to do anything in your birth unless it's a safety issue with you or your baby. I always say that, and I always know that the response is, well, that's what we want. You know, we do, I you know, definitely want to not tick all the boxes. Let's keep everything as normal and natural as possible. But your baby and you are the most important things. And it's not just that day of the birth. It's what comes next. You know, it is what comes, you know, you want a healthy baby and you want a healthy body that, you know, that you've got for the rest of your life. So it's super important that you get that information and you as a family decide what you what you should do. And it's really, really tricky if you've not got that equal relationship with your midwife. And, you know, a lot of people ask about what do we do if it's not the right fit? Should we change? It's always a little bit tricky because it's super hard to get another midwife. I definitely think the first thing you should do is talk to that midwife about how you're feeling and your concerns and what you want to do. And I definitely think if you come across up to a brick wall with that, you need to basically change. You know, it's all about trust and it's all about mutual respect as well. And I would hate to go into a birth with a woman that doesn't trust me because it's never going to work. And it's also that's like your first baby and that's what you remember your whole life. Yeah, it's too special to muck around with, but it's awful. I mean,
I've done it. Yeah,
and it's like you know, I'm that kind of person too. I'd hate to hurt anyone's feelings. Yeah. I just hate that, but it's super important that you do what's right. And yeah, that's definitely where you've got to come at with that.
I've heard that you should ask whether a midwife is epidural certified. What does that mean and what does that imply?
So there's basically a group of, well, midwives can choose what their scope of practice is, and that can be, like we said before, you can do home births or not. And one of the things that you can choose to do or not is provide epidural care.
So is that the person who actually puts the needle in the back?
No. So it's always an anaesthetist that puts the needle in the back, and there's a process. Like, you obviously have to consult with an obstetrician who then says yes or no, and then the anaesthetist comes in and does that. So our role is pretty much just to monitor the epidural and make sure that, you know, it's working fine and the mother's safe and there's been no reactions to it.
Okay.
But yeah, there are, it's definitely a question to ask, because if your midwife is not epidural certified, the way it works is if you go into labour and you trial all your options and then the option you need to take or want to take is an epidural, you then have to wait, like she has to hand over care to one of the hospital midwives who are amazing, but they're also very short on their feet. Mm. So it can
mean waiting
a while. You can wait a while. And it is the nature of a public hospital, but it certainly can be awful. You know, if you're desperate for pain relief and you're waiting, it's not so good.
Yeah.
But then, you know, if you it's not the you know, sometimes it can work in your favour. And, you know, sometimes the midwives, they don't necessarily leave you for the birth. Sometimes they will leave for that part and come back for the birth. Other times they will be there as a support person, but they have actually handed over care because you've had an epidural.
Whereas if they are epidural certified, they have to stay with you for the duration.
Yep, until you deliver pretty much, yeah.
Okay. So that actually is quite an important question. What do you think, Di, in your 30 years of experience, makes a good midwife?
It's to be kind, you know, and to be a team player is a big one. We work with such a variety of people. I think it's super, super important that we all work together for a good outcome. I think it's someone that knows how to listen, and intuition's a big one. Like, and I think that's the beauty of continuity of care. You get to know people really well, and you know how they're feeling just by the way they're looking. Really, yeah.
And lucky to have that in New Zealand, aren't we?
We're really lucky, and we hope that we'll keep that in New Zealand. There is, you know, with the shortage of midwives at the moment, there is word that some things may need to change, but we'll just wait and see on that. But I think a good midwife really at the end of the day is someone that cares and is kind to you and respects you and gives you the information and care that you need to pretty much do it yourself and empower. We're all about empowering women, and it's true. It's about just giving you the confidence to become amazing parents, which you are.
I told you what questions I'd be asking you beforehand because I know you didn't want to come on and you felt like you wouldn't know what to say, even though you have all the information and you're amazing. I didn't ask you about this question, but it's just come to mind. So forgive me if it's not something you want to talk about. But perineal massage.
Yeah.
I remember when I was
nice,
pregnant.
Yeah. As long as you don't want a demonstration.
But is that worthwhile? Does it make a difference? Because I was reading so many blogs. Because some people were saying it reduces your chance of tearing.
Yeah.
And then there were other things I was reading saying it increases your chance. And I thought, I'll just sit safe in the middle and do nothing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's one of those things I always say, if you want to give it a shot, give it a shot. And I think the background, I remember when, you know, years and years ago when it first kind of came out to give it a go, and everyone was, the kind of notion behind it was a lot of first-time mums tear more than they do the second time. Yeah. And it's true. And it's that whole being, you know, whether things have been stretched before or not, I suppose. But it's just one of those things, I think, that it's, you know, why not give it a shot? It doesn't hurt. And I certainly don't think it hurts. It's not going to cause you to have a tear unless you're really vicious of yourself, but I hope you wouldn't do that.
Take it easy.
Yeah. Oh, whoops, she's torn before the baby's coming out. Because I think the other one that's come is really big at the moment is colostrum harvesting. I don't know if you've heard
I've never heard of that. Oh, so, that's getting the...
Yeah, milk out before, mm-hmm. before bubby comes. And we say start doing it after 36 weeks. And we've done it for years and years for people who've had gestational diabetes or any risk factors that the baby may need to have extra milk in those first couple of days. So if their sugars are low, whether they're, you know, for small babies and like I said, diabetics. But it's become a little bit of a big thing at the moment. Like definitely everyone wants to give it a shot. And it is one of those things I say to girls, definitely if you're in those risk factor groups, it's good to give it a shot. But sometimes it's like, hey, once that baby's born, as you know, Eve, you spend a lot of time with your boobs out so and doing time. Stuff. So actually, if you don't have to do it for some people, they might do it for 4 weeks and gather 5 mils, which a baby will swallow in 2 seconds flat. So it's like, yeah, I've sat there for an hour every night for the last 4 weeks and it's gone.
Can you stock up breast milk? Like, I'm currently breastfeeding my first child and that makes me might have a second one. Who knows? When you first asked me after I'd had Gigi, you're like, how many do you want? And I was like, never again, Di. I'm never doing that again. But now I'm open to it because she's pretty cute. Yeah. Can you pump and set aside breast milk for a future child, or do they need different things?
Yeah, the thing is with that is probably the restriction you're going to have is it can only be in the freezer for 6 months.
Yeah.
So unless you're thinking about having a baby within the next 6 months, it's probably not worth it.
I haven't booked you in.
No.
So, and I know you've got a busy Christmas. You got
exactly.
Christmas
off. No, so. We're up to the February babies coming through now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Di, what is the hardest part of your job? Because we know that midwives are overworked, underpaid, not appreciated enough, and yet the job you do is one of the most important jobs in the world.
Yeah.
What's hard about being a midwife?
Probably the hardest thing is the 24/7.
Being on call.
Yeah. You get used to it. I don't feel that I'm on call all the time. You know, you carry on with your daily activities as though you're not. But it's more you have, you know, lots of times where you feel guilt. You feel guilt for your family and your friends for not showing up for things because you're called out, or you're on the phone when you're, you know, supposed to be listening to them, or, yeah, there's all of that kind of stuff. I think definitely I think my hardest thing, and I've told lots of friends this, is being called out at 10 p.m. when you've been working. You've already worked all day and you've just crawled yourself into bed and you get called out, and it's like, honestly, I feel so sorry for myself driving to the hospital. But this is the bit that I've told lots of friends about, is I always do this. I grumble to myself all the way to the hospital and I sit in the car and then I go, nah, strap a smile on your face. This is such a special time, and you get over it and you can sleep the next night. But it is that people remember you for how you treat them. So if you go in there with a bolshy look on your face and grizzle about being tired and not wanting to be there, that's all they'll remember, and it's not worth it. You know, it's such a special privilege to be able to be there, and really you can get sleep at other times.
Well, you know. I'm pretty sure you got called into the hospital for me the first time at like 10 o'clock at night, so I really appreciate that.
I know. Poor me.
I'm so sorry. What is the best part of your job?
Well, the babies. and it's got to be the continuity. It's the you know, 30 years of families that I've been involved with. It's pretty special delivering 1, 2, 3 babies, getting to see these wee babies come in as toddlers and be your buddies, and looking after sisters. And yeah, and like I just said to you before, my baby coming up, that's the baby of someone else I delivered 29 years ago. So
So you're getting into your second generation of babies now.
Yeah, well, I always get asked it, and because of the way the system used to be 30 years ago, we never knew a woman. Like, I worked in the hospital and you'd work a duty and you'd deliver babies and you'd be looking at the notes the whole time going, push Eve, what's your name? You know, we didn't know. And so it was really impersonal. And that's the thing about continuity of care. It's so amazing that you build that relationship up during the pregnancy, and you watch, you know, and that's the thing. You go into the birth with, you know, that full, well, I think most of the time I feel this, the full trust of them on helping them make decisions during that birth, especially the birth process, and when they have their wee babies as well. Yeah.
And all the little baby cuddles are pretty cool, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, my God, I love the babies. But you can't be a midwife without loving babies.
Of course, yeah.
That would be not very
good. Imagine that if you were and
they came out and thought, oh, God, another one. What are we doing? Overpopulation.
I'm going to throw another little curly question at you while I've got you here.
Yeah.
VBAC.
Yeah.
Vaginal birth after caesareans. Asking for a friend. What do you reckon about them?
It depends. I suppose it depends to start with why you had the caesarean in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, someone that, say, for instance, had a caesarean because their first baby was breech, so they're what we call an untried pelvis. They haven't laboured. There wasn't actually a reason other than the baby's position that they had to have a caesarean. On the other hand, you have people that, you know, laboured really well with a nice size baby for them in a good position, and they pushed and they pushed and they pushed and it just didn't come below their pelvis, and you wonder whether that's going to work. Then there's different, you know, medical reasons why you should definitely carry on and have a VBAC. And the other thing that I always kind of run past people is how many babies they want to have, because I think, you know, sometimes it's one of my obstetrician friends said this, sometimes it's better just to bring the baby out the same way that you do the first time. But it depends. It really does depend on those things.
What about if your husband's got a big head and your child's likely
and he's
to
got
have
horns
a big
too.
Noggin?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing is too, it's kind of like, what a lot of people do that don't know is they say, right, we'll book in for a caesarean at 41 weeks or 40 weeks, and if we go into labour before that, we'll see how we go. But there's definitely a lot of people that have successful births after caesarean as well, and especially those ones that actually laboured really well but they had to have a caesarean the first time because their babies got distressed, because they're really good candidates because they've dilated already, so they labour like a second time. It's just the pushing out that is like a first time. But there's so many variables with it, and I definitely think the thing that I hate the most about the whole caesarean talk is that word failure. It's so gnarly for me. I just think people are amazing having babies. It doesn't matter of which way they come out. It's like feeding. I don't care if someone bottle feeds or breastfeeds. I shouldn't say that out loud, should I? But, you know, it's about being happy, and it's about your body and your family and what works best for you. There's just so much pressure, and I hate it. And I've heard it even recently. A girl that I delivered recently, when she had to go for a caesar, said, "Oh, I'm such a failure." Aww. And it just breaks my heart that she'd even think that, to say it out loud, because it's never about being a failure. It's the deck of cards you got dealt, and you're being the most amazing mum by choosing to deliver your baby safely.
And we're lucky to have these options, aren't we?
Yes.
I was looking around at my family, and we were having a conversation, like my older sister and some of my cousins and my friends, and we were like, okay, so you would have died in childbirth. You would have died. We were looking around going, a third of us probably wouldn't be here if it was the olden days and we didn't have the option of caesarean.
Yeah.
So we're very, very lucky to have even a choice, aren't we?
Yeah. And it's definitely really important to go into it feeling really informed, because it is a big decision, and that's why I ask about how many children you're going to have, because most obstetricians would say, you know, once you've had two caesareans, you should probably carry on and have caesareans forevermore. And that comes with risks as you have more babies. Although, you know, there are people that have three or four caesareans, that's fine. It's not to be really fearful. And like I say, you can't do anything about it. If you want to have three babies, it's just good not to know that these are your risk factors. But, you know, for the girls that I know that I look after and they've had a caesarean and they are having they only want two babies and they've got another big baby growing in their tummy, I would say, look, you know, it's much easier to have an elective caesar than to go through all this again. If you're not going to have any more babies, then it's just figuring out what's best for you and your body.
It sounds like these are conversations you have to have with your midwife.
Yeah. And this, it's so individual. And I've had plenty of girls that have had successful births after cesareans as well with no complications. So it's just, it's that deck of cards, you know. Your next baby might be 6 pounds even. Just slip out in the car on nice. The way from Thai Tap.
That sounds yeah. great.
Adam would be really good at that.
Let's hope for that. Oh, can you imagine? Can you imagine? Let's hope for that. Di, I'm going to let you go because I know that you hate being interviewed and hate being on a podcast, but we really appreciate you, not just for coming on, but for the 30 years of service to women, families all around the country. You're freaking amazing. We're very lucky to have you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you so much for listening. Next week on the podcast, we're talking food, what to feed our kids, how to make mealtimes more fun, and when is it fussy eating or a sign your child needs some extra support. In the meantime, you can find us on Instagram at Hapu Club and DM me if you've got any requests for special guests. I will do my best. And I did not mean for that to rhyme. Oh, it's been a long day. All right, ka kite.